Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a huge question. I mean, it's a question that really haunts every ambitious founder and investor out there,
yeah,
especially in the American market.
Right.
How do you build a business that not only works, but, you know, actually thrives in the long run?
It's a critical question.
Because let's be honest, having a brilliant product or a great service,
yeah,
that's maybe half the story.
In fact, yeah.
The real game changer is the structure.
Yeah.
The architecture of how a company creates, delivers,
yeah,
and then captures value.
That's it. That's the whole game.
So that's our deep dive today. We are getting into the business model, the true blueprint for success. Mm-hmm. We're going to walk you through designing a winning model, looking at these massive shifts we've all seen, mm-hmm, you know, subscriptions, platform businesses, and of course, the huge rise of direct-to-consumer brands.
Exactly. Our mission today is, well, it's pretty clear. We're defining the fundamental logic of how a business operates. We want to provide a systematic framework.
A framework for anyone, really.
For anyone. Whether you're launching a startup from scratch or you're pivoting an established company, this strategic foundation, it's your most critical asset. I mean, without a viable model, even the most innovative tech is just a very well-funded project.
Okay, let's just jump right in. We hear the term business model thrown around all the time.
Mm-hmm.
If we strip it all down, what exactly is this architecture we're talking about?
Okay, so at its core, the business model is simply the structure that explains how an organization creates value for its customers.
Okay, creating value.
And this is the crucial part, how it captures a defensible portion of that value back as revenue, as profit. It's the economic engine. It answers the big questions. Who are you serving? What problem are you solving? And, you know, how will your revenue actually exceed your costs?
And before we go any further, there's a confusion point we have to clear up. The business model versus the business plan.
Oh, absolutely. Founders mix these up constantly, and it's a huge problem.
We see them used interchangeably, but for an investor or even for your own team, they serve completely different purposes.
Totally different. The business model is, it's conceptual. It's strategic. It's focused on the fundamental logic. How does this business work?
The how, right.
It's the framework. It's the logic of whether it's even viable. An investor looks at this first. They want to know if the core idea can scale and be defended from competitors. You can often sketch it out on like a single page.
And the business plan?
The business plan is the opposite. It's the detailed operational roadmap. This is your 30, 40, 50 page document with market analysis, financial projections, timelines, all the heavy lifting.
So it answers, how will we make this model work?
Exactly. The model has to be solid before anyone will even bother to read your plan.
That's a perfect distinction. The model's the what, the plan is the how. So if we're drawing this blueprint, what are the essential components? I know there are 9 key pieces that have to be there no matter what you're selling.
There are. And it all starts at the heart of the business. Number one, the value proposition.
What you deliver.
The specific, compelling reason a customer chooses you over anyone else. If that isn't crystal clear and solving a real need, the whole thing just falls apart.
And once you know the value, you have to know who you're giving it to.
That's number two. Customer segments. You have to be precise. Everyone is not a customer segment.
Mm-hmm.
If you try to serve everyone, you end up serving no one.
Okay, so value prop, customer segments.
Yeah.
Then how do you get paid?
Number three, revenue streams. Subscriptions, transaction fees, licensing, ads. The smartest models often stack a few of these together.
Right. Then there's the mechanics of actually getting it to them.
Yep. Fourth is channels, how you reach, communicate with, and deliver that value. Fifth, customer relationships. Is it super high touch and personal, or is it totally self-service?
Okay, that makes sense. So that's the customer-facing side. What about the guts of the operation?
That's the next part. We need key resources, the critical assets. And today, I mean, intellectual property, your patents, your brand, your data is often way more defensible than, say, a factory.
And what you do with those resources.
Yeah, that's key activities. The most important things you have to do just excellently. For a platform like Uber, it's maintenance and security. For a car maker, it's quality control.
And the last two pieces of the puzzle.
Key partners who you collaborate with to do things that aren't your core strength. And finally, the cost structure, all the major costs. This is where you decide, are we a low price, cost-driven business or a premium value-driven brand?
So that framework really lays out all the pieces. I can see how putting them together in different ways creates completely different businesses.
Exactly. For a software company, the key resource is code. The revenue stream is subscriptions. For a retailer, the key resource is physical inventory. And the key activity is logistics. Same blueprint, radically different answer.
That makes it so much clearer. Okay, let's pivot. Let's talk about assembling these pieces into the models that are actually winning in the American market right now.
Let's start with a classic that's been reinvented, the retailer model. It's the oldest one, right? Buy goods, resell them at a markup.
But the strategy now isn't just about the markup. It's all about capital efficiency.
That's it. Profitability boils down to inventory management. The faster you can turn your inventory, sell it, and restock, the better your return on capital. Walmart does this with massive scale. Nordstrom does it with careful curation.
But the real disruption we've seen is direct-to-consumer, the DTC brands.
Oh, absolutely. Companies like Warby Parker or Casper, they just use digital to bypass all the traditional middlemen. They own the customer relationship, which is their key resource.
It means they get better data.
Way better data. And they can reinvest the savings from cutting out distributors into a better product or a lower price. It's a huge structural advantage.
And speaking of new advantages, let's talk about the model that has just fundamentally reshaped the economy. The subscription model.
It's everywhere. Software, media, even food. The advantage for the business is huge. You get predictable revenue and a much higher customer lifetime value, or LTV.
It smooths out cash flow, which has to be a dream for planning.
It is. And for the customer, it's convenient and the cost is predictable. But, and this is a big but.
You have to be absolutely ruthless about one thing.
Yeah.
Keeping those customers. Retention.
Yes. The whole model requires obsessive focus on retention and churn rate. If customers are leaving as fast as they're joining, the model just collapses. Churn is the single most important metric. You have to constantly prove your value.
Okay, now for the really interesting one, I think. The marketplace or platform model.
Mm-hmm.
Uber, Airbnb, Etsy. They don't sell a product, they sell a connection.
That's a perfect way to put it. Their value comes entirely from facilitating transactions between two groups of users. They don't own the cars, the apartments, any of it.
Their success is built on one thing.
A network effect.
Right. The value goes up for everyone as more people join. More hosts on Airbnb attracts more guests, which attracts more hosts.
It's a virtuous cycle, and it can lead to these winner-take-most markets. But launching one is incredibly hard because of that famous chicken and egg problem.
You need buyers to attract sellers, but you need sellers to attract buyers. So how do you solve it?
You have to manufacture momentum. You can't just wait for it to happen. A common strategy is to subsidize one side of the market, often the supply side. Uber gave huge bonuses to drivers at the start because they knew a critical mass of drivers would immediately bring riders.
You're essentially paying to create that initial network.
You are. Another model we see all the time in digital is freemium. Give away the basic service, charge for the good stuff.
Like Spotify or LinkedIn.
Exactly. It works because the cost to serve one more digital user is basically zero. It's a great customer acquisition funnel. But the challenge is finding that perfect balance between free and paid.
Yeah, you risk training your users to expect everything for free.
You absolutely do. It's a real tension. If the free version is too good, nobody upgrades. If it's too limited, people leave before they see the value. The best ones create a hook in the free version that makes the premium features feel almost necessary to really get the job done.
And just quickly, a classic variation that's still so powerful, the razor and blades model.
A brilliant model. You sell the core product, the razor, the printer, the coffee machine, super cheap, maybe even at a loss.
To lock people into buying your high-margin consumables. The blades, the ink, the pods.
Exactly. It locks the customer right into your ecosystem.
Okay, that's a great survey of the structures. Let's shift gears. How do you actually design and validate one of these? For someone starting out, what is step one? And what's the mistake they almost always make?
Step one is always, always deep customer understanding. The mistake is the backwards approach.
Starting with a cool product and looking for a problem.
Exactly. You have to start with a specific customer segment and find their urgent, important needs that are being underserved. The design has to start with validated customer pain, not your cool idea.
So once you have that pain point, how do you test if your model actually solves it without, you know, betting the whole company on a guess?
That is step two. You use the lean startup methodology. You treat your model as a set of hypotheses that need to be tested. You build an MVP, a minimum viable product.
And an MVP isn't just a buggy early version of your product.
No, not at all. It's the simplest possible thing you can build that allows you to learn about customer response. It's designed specifically to test your riskiest assumption, which is usually, will people actually pay for this?
That makes sense. But even with a great MVP, How do you know the business is fundamentally healthy before you try to scale it? Because scaling a broken model just perquaints. It burns cash faster.
Which brings us to step three. You have to master your unit economics. This means knowing your profitability on a per customer basis.
And the two key metrics here.
CC and LTV. Customer acquisition cost, your total sales and marketing spend divided by your new customers. And customer lifetime value, the total profit from an average customer over their entire relationship with you.
And there's a rule of thumb for this, right?
There is. For a healthy, scalable model, your LTV to CAC ratio should be over 3 to 1. If it's below 1 to 1, you are literally paying more to get a customer than you will ever make from them. Scaling that just makes the problem worse, faster.
A painful but very necessary lesson. So let's say the economics work. What about the complexity of growth? What works for a team of 10 breaks when you hit 100?
And that's step four. Growth breaks your early systems. So you have to move to systematization. This means documenting key processes, setting clear roles, and implementing systems to track everything. The founder has to shift from doing all the work to managing the people and systems that do the work well.
I know a founder who hit that wall. He insisted on approving every single decision, and he burned out. His activity scaled, but his capacity didn't.
It's the classic trap. Systematization isn't about creating bureaucracy. It's the infrastructure that lets you grow without sacrificing quality.
So we know no model lasts forever. I mean, we see market leaders fail because they stick to what worked yesterday. When should you realize your model needs a fundamental change, not just a small tweak?
You have to watch for the signals. Are your margins getting squeezed? Is growth slowing down even though you're spending more on marketing? Is your CAC just climbing and climbing? If so, the problem is probably structural.
It's the Blockbuster versus Adobe story.
It is. Blockbuster clung to its old retail model and died. Adobe made the incredibly painful but smart shift from selling software licenses to a cloud subscription model. They secured their future. The best time to change is always before the crisis hits, when you still have the resources to do it.
And looking specifically at the American context, how does the business model choice affect, say, legal structure and funding?
Oh, it dictates it.
Yeah.
If your model is a massive scale SaaS or platform business and you want venture capital, you have to be a C Corp. VCs require it for tax reasons and stock options.
And for other models.
If you're a service firm or a local retailer with predictable cash flow, an LLC is often better. It's simpler. And those models are much better suited for bank loans, not the high-risk, high-return world of venture capital. Your model determines your funding options.
Last question on this. Success attracts copycats. How do you build a competitive moat around your model that actually lasts?
It's critical. You need your protected IP, sure. But the stronger moats today are things like behavioral switching costs making your service so integrated into a customer's life that leaving is a huge pain.
And the other big one.
Data network effects. Your service gets smarter and better for everyone as more people use it because it collects more data. That creates a moat that actually gets wider and deeper over time, pushing competitors further away.
That really elevates the thinking here. So it seems like creating a business model is not a one-time thing. It's this ongoing journey of learning and adapting.
It has to be. You have to maintain that discipline of testing your ideas, measuring what really matters, and being willing to pivot based on real evidence, not on ego.
So the best design happens in the real world. You launch the MVP, you talk to real customers, and you prove the numbers work. That's what separates the winners from the shooting stars.
100%.
So to leave you with a final thought to mull over, remember that the business model that gets you your first customer will probably be very different from the one that gets you to sustainable profit. And that model will be different again from the one that allows you to truly scale. The real strategic challenge is knowing when to pivot and rebuild that architecture for the next stage of your journey. That's all for this deep dive.